From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump and First Lady Melania Trump visited areas of the Florida panhandle affected by Hurricane Michael on Monday. Trump told reporters he was going to ask Congress for more disaster funding. The powerful hurricane hit Florida on October 10th as a Category 4 storm with winds between 140 to 155 miles per hour. In the span of just a few hours, it devastated whole towns and then moved ahead to the state of Georgia. As Trump surveyed the horrendous damage that killed 17 people, he marveled at the storm's power. Neither he nor Florida Governor Rick Scott, who accompanied him, made any mention of climate change. In 2015, Governor Scott banned the use of the terms climate change and global warming in state documents and websites. Then in 2017, Scott signed a bill into law allowing challenges to science teachings in school, including instruction about global warming. And of course, President Trump's record of denying climate change is well known. We turn now to Tanya Galloni. She is the managing attorney of Earth Justice's Florida office. Welcome to the program, Tanya.
Thank you.
So Florida, of course, has been prone to hurricanes for a very long time. That's just what people expect. It's something that happens in late summer, early fall. But in recent years, the entire Gulf Coast region, Florida, the panhandle, you know, going up the coast has borne the brunt of stronger and stronger storms. This particular storm that hit the panhandle, Hurricane Michael, I understand was the strongest such storm in decades. How unusual was it?
This was the strongest storm to hit the Florida Panhandle in about 100 years. So it's really one of the strongest storms in recorded history.
It's incredible because I understand that it developed very fast. And then in the span of just a few hours, it absolutely destroyed whole towns, Panama City, Mexico Beach. There were remarks that it looked like bombs had been dropped on these towns.
There are definitely parts of the coast that have been completely decimated, and it did. It developed incredibly fast. I think people went to bed expecting one thing and then were completely surprised by how the storm developed so quickly and intensified so quickly.
And that was very different from the way Hurricane Florence developed, right? In North Carolina, South Carolina, and surrounding states, there was such a slow buildup of that hurricane, which was very broad, very wide, very slow moving. It's, you know, spent days going over the areas, dumped a whole bunch of rain. There was more rain than wind. It feels like we've had sort of two types of completely opposite styles of hurricane in the span of just a few weeks.
Right, and you can't really win with these storms. If it's slow moving, then you're getting incredible amounts of rainfall that are so damaging. And when it's quickly moving with the strong winds, you get the kind of leveling that we've seen in Mexico Beach and other parts of the state.
Both of these storms were highly unusual, weren't they?
They were.
So I want to play for you and our audience the video of President Trump making, you know, his sort of expected visit to the devastated areas in Florida where Hurricane Michael had hit, meeting with residents and making remarks to reporters about just, you know, how strong the storm was. And we also hear the very usual standard self-congratulations of how the government is responding. Here is President Trump.
I've never looked behind you. I mean, these massive trees are just ripped out of the earth. We've seen mostly water, and water can be very damaging and horrible and scary, you know, when you see water rising 14, 15 feet, but nobody's seen anything like this. This is really incredible. And the job they've done, first responders, FEMA, the job they've done is incredible. This road, 5 hours ago, you couldn't ride on it. And today, you see the trees are all pushed. Today, we're having not much of a problem. Pretty amazing job. We're going to do a lot, and we're doing a lot for Florida. We're now going to Georgia. Georgia was hit very hard. But when you look, and I think the governor will tell you we're doing a lot, we are doing more than anybody would have ever done. And probably there hasn't been hits like this, certainly not very often. They say 50 years ago, there was one that had this kind of power. 50 years ago, that's a long time.
That's President Trump marveling at the power of Hurricane Michael. How hypocritical were his statements, Tanya? He remarked that, you know, maybe there was a storm this strong 50 years ago. Shouldn't that be telling him, telling Rick Scott, that something is deeply, deeply wrong and that their denial of climate change is more and more hypocritical?
It really is baffling. We have so much information now. We're looking at an administration, a president, and an administration at the state and federal level. They really have their heads in the sand. And their refusal to acknowledge what everybody else can see, the impact of climate change, the intensity of these storms, the fact that we should be anticipating this and addressing it instead of patting ourselves on the back when it's time for recovery and disaster assistance is really a shame.
What do you make of the federal government's response? We know that there has been a statewide response. There were a lot of the National Guard was activated, and there have been a lot of state workers that have been sent to the areas. But there have been some reports suggesting that FEMA really wasn't there. But if you listen to Trump, they're doing the best job that anybody could ever possibly do and anyone's ever done in the history of storms in the U.S.
I think we're still waiting for all the information to come in. There are definitely reports that the response has not been what folks would have liked to see in some places. We have to remember that this is an administration that cut money from FEMA to give it to immigrant detention. You know, at a time when we're seeing an increased severity and intensity of storms, to be cutting money from an agency like FEMA makes absolutely no sense. The disaster funding is incredibly important. It's not the whole picture. There's a lot more we could do on the preventive side. But to be cutting that funding is really beyond the pale.
Right. Is it true that the Trump transferred a few million dollars from FEMA to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency?
That's what's been reported, about $10 million transferred for immigrant detention. That may include the detention of kids. So I'm not sure which agency that would have gone to, but it was diverted from FEMA.
So even if that money hadn't been diverted, even if FEMA's funding is preserved, when you have a situation where climate change is driving these horrendous storms, and here in California, of course, we have the wildfires, etc., you're going to need more and more and more money. At some point, the money that you're putting into recovering from these disasters is more than the money it would take to simply prevent them in the first place, right?
Absolutely. It makes no economic sense, and it certainly doesn't make sense for taxpayers. It makes no sense just on the books. We have so much in our power that we could and should be doing. We have so much information. We have data. We have the means within our reach to be making some critical changes to infrastructure and the way we do energy in this country. And instead, the government is simply, like I said, sticking its head in the sand, refusing to acknowledge these realities. Calling climate change a hoax or refusing to talk about it at all, really in a state of denial, a willful denial, because the information is there, the evidence is there, and there's no excuse at this point to be doing nothing about it. To be saying that these storms are natural disasters really doesn't fit anymore. There's nothing natural about this. We are having an impact, and we are the ones who need to scale that back.
Right. We've had not just Hurricane Michael now and the Florida Panhandle. We've had Hurricane Florence. We've had, before that last year, Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico. We've had Hurricane Harvey in Houston. The span of just 2 years, these historic record-breaking storms that just keep making it clearer and clearer that this is not normal. The only other storm before the past couple of years from years of storms that we can really remember were the Superstorm Sandy that hit to the New York and New Jersey area, and then of course Hurricane Katrina, so we can actually remember those, and now in the last span of just 2 years we've had at least four major massive storms and more that I know I'm missing.
Absolutely. The number and intensity has definitely, we've seen a shift. We know that warm water fuels storms, and we know that we're warming the ocean's waters. We know that sea level rise contributes to storm surge, and we're contributing to sea level rise. So we know all of these things are happening. It's right in front of our eyes. We're not talking about some future climate change crisis. We are living it right now.
Now, what impact has there been on the discourse in Florida of the laws that Rick Scott passed in the last several years? I mentioned the a ban on the terms climate change and global warming in all state documents and websites, and then also the what had been called the sort of anti-science law.
It's really a big picture that you have to look at, because we have had a governor who has cut funding for the Department of Environmental Protection, refused to talk about or acknowledge climate change, gotten rid of experts in the field, really tried to shrink the agency, much in the way that the Trump administration has done with the EPA. And what that has done is really shackle the hands of the state and the people to be able to prevent and address these crises as they happen. It's definitely something that has gained more traction that people are talking about, though, because the environmental consequences are right in our faces right now. We're talking about storms, but we've also had the massive red tide and algae bloom, fish kills seen in different parts of the state, some of that now drifting to the Northwest as well. Major, major impacts on sea life, on coastal communities, on fishermen and that industry, tourism, real estate. And I think that people are really starting to see that these things are tangible. They're in our face. We cannot ignore them.
I'm so glad you brought up the issue of the toxic algae. We'd been covering that on our program several months ago. That issue, of course, hasn't gone away. So when you have these kinds of phenomena, are you seeing ordinary people in Florida accept, you know, even if they previously believed Rick Scott, believed Donald Trump, are you seeing their minds changed when they are personally impacted? Because unfortunately, that's often what's required in order for people to actually change their minds about issues, is when they become personally affected by them.
Absolutely. And it's not unlike the hurricane situation that we find ourselves in, because the state government here in Florida will tell us that red tides and algae blooms are naturally occurring. Well, yes and no. They can happen in nature, sure, but the intensity, the severity, the frequency of what we have seen this year, absolutely not. That is not simply naturally occurring. We are contributing to that. We have the runoff, the pollution, the fertilizers, the manure that are feeding these blooms, and we call them algae blooms, which doesn't sound so bad. The algae blooms are actually a form of bacteria, cyanobacteria, and the red tides produce a toxin. So we're talking about real threats, not only to marine life, but to human health.
Now, the often the case, don't these sorts of climate change phenomena impact poor people disproportionately? What is the impact on poor folks? There was a really great piece in Associated Press showing the impact on poor Floridians from Hurricane Michael, many of whom don't have the means to evacuate when the call is put in to evacuate. They may have nowhere to go. There's a story of one woman who has insurance that might actually cover the damage that her house sustained, but doesn't have a cell phone to call the insurance company. I was heartbroken when I read that story. Poor people are always impacted disproportionately, even though they had the least hand in creating the problem, right?
That is absolutely true. And these are heartbreaking stories. And we're thinking about some very basic life necessities. You mentioned communication. We're also looking at water scarcity, access to power, access to food. Those communities are hit the hardest, have the least means to not only remedy the problem, but also to access the resources that they need when they're in this most dire of situations.
What is needed now in Florida in the short term and the long term? What would you like to see Governor Rick Scott, state legislators doing? And of course, we very soon may have a new governor in Florida.
The state absolutely needs to promote renewable energy, move away from fossil fuels. This is the Sunshine State. We need to be doing everything in our power to be moving to a clean energy economy and away from dirty fossil fuels that are doing nothing but contributing to climate change and sea level rise.
Right, use some of that sunshine to
put it to good work. We have the sunshine, now we need the political will to put that sunshine to work. We're one of the worst states in the country when it comes to solar power. And it's really inexcusable, especially when we have such low-lying coastal communities. We're a peninsula. We're mostly surrounded by water. We need to be taking this seriously, and we need to be on that path toward clean, renewable energy.
It feels as though when Governor Rick Scott announced ahead of the hurricane that people need to evacuate, you know, he used very strong language, as he should have. It was very important for the governor of that state to call people to evacuate. But it almost seemed to me to be a symbol of what he is essentially relegating the state's residents to do on a long-term basis. Because if you do nothing about climate change, Florida will disappear underwater, won't it?
Right. I mean, we're in this pattern of do nothing and then react to a crisis, do nothing and then react to a crisis. And that doesn't make any sense for the citizens of Florida when we can't constantly be only in reaction mode. We need to be managing these situations now.
So you have at the state level some obvious solutions, and certainly Florida could take the example of California, couldn't it, which has pushed harder than nearly any other state to transition to renewable energy sources. Not even, you know, California could do even better, but at least by relative standards, it's doing better. Florida could follow that path. But what about on the federal level? Are states essentially left to fend for themselves for as long as we have presidents and members of Congress that don't try hard enough or don't care enough?
There's definitely an increased pressure right now on states to step up and do everything that they can because the federal government has been so derelict in its duties. The Trump administration, we know we've seen all sorts of rollbacks in terms of protective rules, wanting to withdraw from the climate agreement, all of these stances that are only taking us backward and really making it harder for us to make progress. That gives the states an opportunity to step up, but it also puts a greater burden on the shoulders of states. There are also some local governments that are doing what they can within their power to advance protections for their citizens, but we need state and federal cooperation to really battle the climate problem.
Are you, going back to this issue of the state level politics, are you at all hopeful that the candidates running for the governor's race, Andrew Gillum on the Democratic side or Ron DeSantis on the Republican side, are going to be any level of improvement over Rick Scott on the issue of climate, I should say?
I think what we need is for the Florida electorate to demand that they do better, whoever is elected. We need to make it clear that this is a priority for the people of Florida, for the economy, for the ecology, for the health of its citizens, for the ability to really maintain life here. It's so critical. It's up to the citizens of Florida to make that a priority for the next governor.
And given that we're literally just a few weeks from the elections, now would be the ideal time for those candidates to make this an important midterm issue, as people are reeling from this damage, and you promise to do something about climate change, you might actually get much more traction and win many more votes, right? I mean, you know, this is people's lives and livelihoods and homes. Some people have had their homes for generations.
And we've seen what 8 years of doing nothing looks like. And I don't think anybody likes what they see. So I think that ought to be the message that's being sent, is we've seen what gutting our Department of Environmental Protection looks like. We've seen like what taking resources away looks like, denying climate change. We've seen that. We tried it. It's horrific. We need to do better. We can do better. We will.
Tanya, give out a website for Earth Justice.
Yeah, it's earthjustice.org.
We'll post a link to that from our website. That's earthjustice.org. Tanya, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Tanya Galloni, Managing Attorney of Earth Justice's Florida office. We've been discussing Hurricane Michael in Florida. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RUWithSonali.